WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives. One moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
You're listening to Fresh Air. This is WUHY FM in Philadelphia. It's 20 minutes to 5 now. And in the studio with me is Fresh Air's film critic, Stuart Samuels. And over the weekend, we both saw King Kong. So we're going to devote this film segment to that great beast, the Kong before and the Kong after.
The AK and, and BK, whatever. I didn't particularly like the new Kong.
I didn't like it either. And I strongly disliked it.
Well, I mean, I can appreciate Dino De Laurentiis's intentions and what he tried to do. I feel he failed, and I want to sort of talk about that so much rather than just sort of criticizing the film for its silliness, because it is silly in a lot of ways. Just a couple of weeks ago, I was teaching the old King Kong to my class, and what struck me about the old King Kong versus the new King Kong was that the old King Kong is a real, authentic horror film. And what I mean by that is horror films, the audience is really the only one who knows what's going on. What draws people into a horror film is it plays on the audience's involvement. And no one in the film really understands the total dimensions of what all the characters are involved in.
That's a very good point. And usually a lot of the film is taken up with somebody trying to convince somebody else that there is a monster on the loose or is a strange, indescribable force that he knows nobody will believe, and indeed they don't.
Right, and we're the only one really can understand Kong's involvement with Fay Wray. Fay Wray can't. She's screaming all the time, and so there is no real understanding of that involvement with Kong in the old film. What the new film is, and De Laurentiis even says it himself, it is a love story. It's Eric Siegel revisited with Dino De Laurentiis, really is. In fact, the theater I saw it at, the next attraction is Eric Siegel's sequel to Love Story going to play there. So there's a real correlation there. And what I mean by it that it's a love story is that in this particular film in King Kong, the old King Kong, Fay Wray, did not understand really the intentions of the ape. She's innocent to the end. She's innocent. She understands a little bit, but she's really frightened all to death about the whole thing. She's running continuously. In this film, Fay Wray's role is played by, is taken by a character named Dawn, symbolically dressed in black as opposed to white. And it really means something because the new creature is not innocent at all. She is the supremely seductive sophisticate. She was found floating in a raft somewhere off a yacht in the middle of the Pacific, and there's a kind of seduction about her relationship to Kong that was not in the original. Not only does she understand what Kong is after, she plays with it. She tries to, and eventually she controls the ape. The difference between the Fay Wray woman and the new woman, Carol, I think Langley or whatever her name is that she really is aggressive. She's a modern woman in a sense of De Laurentiis's conception of a modern woman. She's aggressive. She's assertive. She's really the domineering individual.
But she's terribly stupid.
Well, she's stupid. Yes, in a certain sense.
For example, who if they had any smarts about them would, when they are being held up by King Kong, and this is meant to be funny, mm-hmm. but it doesn't work, say, "Oh, Kong, put me down. I'm a Scorpio or Aquarius, whatever her sign was, and you know that means I'm afraid of heights." Now, if that's a line that is meant to be funny, it severely fails. If it's a line that's meant to reveal personality, what can it reveal except stupidity?
It's stupidity, but a certain sense of sophisticated seduction. I mean, I think I wouldn't identify the Dawn with a modern woman at all. I think it's a fiction. It's a caricature of what some of the traits of the liberation of women are sort of are being identified with: the aggressiveness, the assertiveness, the things that are positive in terms of that. But what this does is it ties it to seduction. It ties it to manipulation, because that's exactly what she does to this ape. Instead of what she does, she punches him in the nose at one point. She taunts him. She seduces him. At one point on the ship, she drops into his palm, and actually this giant 40-foot, 50-foot ape, she tells, "Be quiet. Sit in the corner. Relax. Don't let yourself bother." The ape is stupid. The ape is stupid. The ape is...
And in that sense, you think there are a couple that deserve each other. You think that they're the perfect match while you're watching
Well, the point is, it doesn't have any of the involvement we have the first one. The first King Kong was that here was this ape who all of a sudden was eroticized. The first King Kong was really a psychosexual fantasy. It played off on dreams, played off on fears of the unknown, of the need, you know, the feelings of instinctual desire.
And of a very smoky, foggy landscape that envelops the
whole dream landscape,
film.
The landscape of going through the fog into the fog in this film is around the island, is not a wrong ship. The ship is in clear water. It's the island's in fog. It's exactly the opposite in the original film. It's everything else is in fog, and the island is really in the open in this mysterious underworld. And the Kong's early version of Kong Kong does battle with dinosaurs in this landscape of eroticism. Really, it's a landscape of phallic symbols, of deep chasms, of dreary, mysterious, dreamlike environment. This one, there's none of that. There's a beautiful scenery.
Yeah, it's kind
there's
of like lovely, a travelogue.
Right,
yeah.
Lovely,
come to the world of Kong. Yeah.
Come to Hawaii. Come to Maui. Live on the island. You know, live on the beach. And here, the old King Kong was a very smart ape. He wrestled. He punched. He outwitted the dinosaurs. He outwitted all the activities. This one is so stupid and such a brute that he becomes really a putty in the hands of this sophisticated, smart, intelligent woman. So where Fay Wray was always innocent and always screaming, Dawn is sophisticated, super tough, and seductive. Now, what's absent in this film, I think, is really the psychological dimension. And what happens is that De Laurentiis sacrificed psychological involvement of the audience to a realistic presentation on the screen. Everything on that screen is done to the point where you start to believe the possibility of the involvement. The ape is so made so real in many cases. So much money was spent on making him so real that you start to, the relationship of his finger and his palm and the rest of his body to this woman becomes plausible, where it was not in the original one. In the original one, there was really a kind of way beyond any conception of reality. I wasn't even talking in terms of reality here.
I disagree a bit there, because I agree that the other one is not talking about reality, and that's why we can kind of accept it and really give ourselves to the film. But in this one, although Kong is very realistically made, technically, mm-hmm. the part that he's given and the facial expressions that he has to make and the kind of constant horny grunting that he has to go through is so unbelievable and then too ultimately boring that we get really tired of the characterization. And it's not quite realism. It's an attempt towards it that fails so badly that you're left with nothing because the psychological overtones don't exist.
Yeah, well, the real realism becomes silly. In the old version, the mysteriousness became almost mythic. And that's what gave one's involvement, I think, and why that old one can be watched over and over again without losing any real excitement about it. In fact, you gain new insights into it. This one, you see it once and that's it. You see the special effects and you get involved in that. There's also another interesting element, I think, in with relationship to special effects and myth, and that this film seems to be saying, it has some very clever moments to it. It says that our myths have become our advertising slogans. These were the old myths of the 30s, were the myths of the fear of the unconscious, the instinctual, the life that was not really addressed and dealt with. We are a society that's lived our instinctual, unconscious needs out, at least in terms of public activity. We're very much concerned with making our instinctual desires public. Well, I think what happens is that idea of tapping into the instinctual and to the unconscious, particularly the sexual motif, which the original Kong done, was no longer plausible in this one. De Laurentiis was very much concerned with making another Jaws, and that he tried to do with this. But what he lacked, and what Jaws has, is Jaws has tapped into the element of fear. Kong has not tapped into any of those elements, and what it's done is really tried to put something over on the audience in terms of special effects, and what special effects are very much associated with is hype, sleight of hand. And the film was really a sleight of hand in many ways. The myths of, in fact, at one point in the movie it says, Esso has tiger in a have a tiger in your tank, we'll have a Kong in your car, you know, as we'll bring them back alive in order to increase our advertising slogan. So that De Laurentiis and the new King Kong, I think, are both an example and an embodiment of this kind of involvement that we have a society, that McLuhan has talked about how our myths have really become slogans, and that both the film is a product of advertising hype, and the film is about advertising and not anything that really we have to fear. It's just an example of the way we've been duped, and the film is really an embodiment of that sense of being duped. A third element, which I found really interesting in this film, is that the initial King Kong was a conflict between the individual Kong, instinctual, versus the egomaniacal film director for the possession of the erotic object, being Fay Wray. I mean, there was a conflict between Kong, modern civilization, for this object. In this one, there are very confused conflicts. You have a conflict between the intellectual paleontologist from Princeton, played by Jeff Bridges, versus the corporate executive from Petrox, who is the corporate side. So you have, one, in one sense, this conflict between the old conflict of students versus administrators, or hippies versus straight conformists. And there's some people have argued that the Petrox symbol is a pun for Pet Rocks, which was, again, an advertising slogan that people started to buy all these Pet Rocks, remember, last year? And it was like,
I don't remember that.
The Pet Rocks, everybody used to buy it for Christmas present, $5 rocks. It was just pieces of rocks in a box. And Pet Rocks was, the old Pet Rock concept is an advertising slogan. So that, in terms of the conflict, so that in one sense, the new King Kong is a dressed-up version of the student radical hippie turned now professor,
yes,
versus the conservative student now turned corporate executive.
Absolutely.
So you have one of those with bits of Vietnamese-linked dialogue in there, like, this island is full of natives that were taking away their birthright, they're bombing him, the helicopters that are all associated with Vietnam experience. But it's also a conflict between Kong, who has this desire for, not sex, he's love, he's in love. Kong is not after sex as he was in the original one. He's after a love relationship. He wants to take her back and have and set up home with her. And the new Kong, he's lovesmith. He's like a freshman, a sophisticated, you know, sexy cultural, who's after a sexy cultural combination of a Sybil Shepherd, Ally McGraw, Marilyn Monroe, with tinges of Betty Davis in there. And he's sort of like, there's an element of this kind of love-sick freshman Kong sort of acting like that. And the film is turned about. It's no longer about instinctual drives and erotic desires. It's about sexual seduction and unrequited love, which is a very different sensibility than the earlier version. In the original, Kong strips Fay Wray, sniffs her, smells her on his lair. In this one, Kong bathes Dawn, the name, and literally blows dry her hair like he was a hairdresser. And there was some point at which Barbara Streisand very significantly wanted to play the role of Dawn, you know, in her relationship with her hairdresser friend. But nonetheless, there was this scene in there where he really becomes her servant, blow drying her hair instead of really developing his erotic sensibilities that he had before her. So there was this really sort of interesting
There's another connection. Element involved in that scene, I think. It's a kind of a hallmark of softcore porn to get a woman in tight-fitting clothes very wet and have her writhe around a bit, which she does within that scene where he puts her under the waterfall to wash off the petroleum that she's been rolling around in before when he dropped her down.
Yeah, but sort of what's interesting is that I don't know if many people know it, but there have been three versions of Kong. There was the original version, which was much more erotic, much more sexual, much more violent. Then in the 1940s, it was re-released again, where they cut out and released all the sexual and violent elements. So Kong became a kind of almost a nebbish, really, who was kind of taken advantage of by this movie producer. And this one, so you have a movement from a kind of instinctual eroticism to a kind of censored censorship, a very straight old version, to a more romanticized love version. But one must say, in terms of positive aspects, the film does have really very good special effects. And the special effects in a good theater arrangement with stereophonic sound, I guess, would be worth, to some people, the price of admission. I'm sure that if Kong gets anything in terms of awards, it will get a special effects award
for Hollywood. It's only hope.
But there was a possibility of another help. As I was looking at the film and listening to it, it had the plausibility and the possibility of being high camp, of being another young Frankenstein, another Blazing Saddles. I mean, Mel Brooks, as the director of this, would have been a superb film. As it is, one of the writers, a man named Semple, is a very good camp writer. He wrote the Batman Robin series with a biff bang, very kind of fun. And some of his lines come through in this. Unfortunately, they're placed in very realistic dialogue or around realistic dialogue, so the humor really doesn't come out. I mean, individually, such lines as, "You must be an Aries," which he says to Ape, it's very funny. Or, you male chauvinist ape. There's some very funny lines, but the way it's delivered, the context, you don't even want to laugh because it becomes silly rather than humorous. The sight of Kong, for example, encased in a giant Petrox gas pump at the end is very high camp. But again, the way it's handled, it loses all of that element of camp. So on one level, it had the possibility of being a very funny, humorous, satirical version of the old. And I think it would have worked at that level. This is a very confused film. And the confusion probably comes out best in the ending, where the hippie-turned professor, Jeff Bridges, is cheering on Kong from one side of the World Trade Center as if he were a North Vietnamese soldier being attacked by American helicopters. I mean, you have this in one version. He says, "Go get him, Kong," as he takes one of the helicopters and throws it down. In the old version, Kong was against the rest of the world. There was no one on his side. There was no one who was there to cheer him on. We, the audience, were cheering him on in the old version. And everybody else in the film, including Fay Wray and all the other people, were really out to get him. So that gave us involvement. This one is none of that. You have the Jeff Bridges cheering him on. And Dawn, who understands it, telling him, "Don't put me down. Because if you put me down, they'll kill you." Again, sympathizing with Kong. So the sympathy that is presented on the screen and the support for Kong robs the audience of the sadness of the original ending, of feeling they're sad for us, so why should we be sad? Why should we get tears in our eyes for this animal being destroyed? And the old one, he really was a mythic creature turned human. And the sympathy we have for the old one is that we understand his desire to be human, to gratify his instinctual needs, to identify with his plight. We understand that. In the new King Kong, he's larger than life. He's turned docile. He's a male chauvinist ape who's become, domesticated, who in the end, really is not alone against the rest of the world, but is part of that kind of arrangement with two of them cheering him on against the helicopters. We're just asked to cheer on at the end. In the end, the new King Kong, instead of becoming real, becomes symbolic. He becomes symbolic, and that's why I don't think we have any involvement with him. He becomes a symbol of all the natural environments that were raped by the capitalist corporate structure. He's become symbolic of all those student radicals who were seduced by corporate funds in the 70s. He becomes symbolic of all the small islands and nations that were brutalized by civilization because at the end the helicopters armed with machine guns tear them apart. And he becomes symbolic of the sexually impotent images of other films like Bonnie and Clyde and Sonny and Godfather and Kong. All three of them have the same thing done with them, and then they're riddled with bullets and blood gushing from all this. All of them are the same. And all of them, so that in the end, he is destroyed symbolically. He no longer has the kind of human element that we identify with the old King Kong. And in the end, what is successful is really the corrupt social order, who sort of wins out, and Petrox and Kong is lost, and Dawn is lost in the middle of it. They all are separate at the end. They try to get to each other, but the crowd prevents Dawn from getting to her new boyfriend, the paleontologist professor, and Kong's lying in the street. So there really isn't any coming together for the audience to leave the theater either up, saddened, or moved. Instead, they're left with a certain empty feeling.
I was left with an empty feeling. I was bored through a lot of it and sorely disappointed. I'm sure there will be a lot of people listening who will not be able to keep themselves away from Kong film one way or the other, an emotion which I can sincerely understand.
It'll make its money back.
Right. Yeah, well, certainly a lot of money paid. Maybe that's something we should be talking about another time, the amount of money spent on a film mm-hmm. like Kong with the kinds of results, Stuart, that you have mm-hmm. been talking about. Thanks a lot, Stuart. Some very interesting comments about the new King Kong. That's about it for Fresh Air this afternoon. My name's Terry Gross. I want to thank you very much for listening and wish you a very good evening.